Good evening. This is your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, September 2nd, 2020. Ahead tonight, analyzing Arkansas's COVID-19 numbers, an effort launched in March has attracted thousands of followers and taken just as many hours to curate. Now, that service is transferring to the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda talks to those involved in the shift in just a few minutes. After a few days of reported declining new cases of COVID-19 in Arkansas, the latest report indicates a rise. At today's press briefing, Governor Asa Hutchinson announced 615 new cases and 27 newly added deaths from the virus. The new case numbers come from just fewer than 4,800 new test results. Dr. Jose Romero, Arkansas's Secretary of Health, says 13 of those 27 newly recorded deaths are deaths that occurred more than 3 weeks ago, but are just now being tabulated on a state level. 841 Arkansans have died from COVID-19 since the pandemic began. Hospitalizations in Arkansas are up by 12 over the last 24 hours, meaning 435 patients with complications in hospitals in the state. Seven counties are reporting more than 20 new cases, the most in Washington County, 67. Pulaski County reports 62 new cases, Benton County, 60. And Dr. Romero says the Arkansas Department of Health is seeing more cases from college campuses, and he says campus communities can and should take measures to slow the spread of the virus at colleges across the state.
You can control it through the measures that we've discussed many, many times from this podium. That is the use of masks, the social distancing that has been advised, and hand sanitation, avoiding large crowds and large parties. I realize that part of college life is the socialization that goes on. But in today's environment, it is important that you keep in mind the social responsibility that you bear to the entire society.
Much of today's briefing dealt with economic matters related to the virus. Arkansas's public schools will opt into a U.S. Department of Agriculture waiver, allowing for students to have access to meals without cost through the end of the year. Arkansas's Secretary of Education, Johnny Key, says opting in allows districts to claim all students at the free meal rate for meals that qualify for federal reimbursement.
Many of our families who might not qualify for free meals are still going through a tough time and can be worried about how to keep food on the table. Now their children will have one less thing to worry about as they adjust to the evolving in-school and remote learning scenarios. These waivers also eliminate a massive administrative burden on our school nutrition staff, allowing them to focus primarily on serving meals to their students.
And the CDC is issuing a moratorium on evictions for people who've lost work during the pandemic. The governor says it's a broad-based order.
It requires tenants who want to take advantage of this moratorium to present an affidavit saying that for COVID reasons, their income is not sufficient to pay rent. And it also makes it clear under this that this does not relieve the tenants from their duty to pay rent or prevent landlords from issuing late fees. And so that's important to note. And I encourage tenants out there, if you have challenges because of lost income on making rent payments, that you go to the Department of Human Services that you go to your local community action agency or your nonprofit groups in your community because they have some funds for rental assistance.
The governor says there is some positive economic news. The state's net available revenue report for August is $41 million above forecast, and for the fiscal year, now 2 months old, net available revenue more than $93 million above revenue. Still, the governor says there are things Congress can do to help states as they navigate a nearly six-month-old pandemic.
The first thing that we need is greater flexibility in spending the existing CARES Act money that we have as a state and to extend the deadline for spending that money. That will allow us to invest more in high-speed broadband in our rural communities. It will allow us to make sure we have enough money set aside for vaccine distribution, but we need that flexibility and that delay in terms of this extending the time period for spending that money. Secondly, we'd like to have an extension of the increased FMAP, that is their matching rate for Medicaid, that is at a higher rate right now because of COVID-19, and they have some restrictions on us that we cannot roll people off of the rolls, and so the Medicaid rolls get a little bit larger. We need a little bit more flexibility, but we need an extension of that federal higher level of federal matching on our Medicaid funds.
The complete briefing can be seen at the governor's YouTube channel. The League of Women Voters of Arkansas challenging a ruling made by the Arkansas Supreme Court last week that struck a proposed amendment from the November ballot. The group is seeking a federal court to reverse the decision invalidating signatures that would have placed the amendment to change the every 10 years redistricting process before voters. And there is a change in downtown Bentonville tonight. That's the sound of a Confederate statue being removed from the Bentonville Square, captured on Facebook by a KUAF listener. The statue had been in the middle of the city square for more than a century. Earlier this year, an agreement was reached for the removal of the statue and for its eventual placement at a nearby private park. This is Ozarks at Large. Springdale resident, journalist, and small business owner Misty Orpin started tracking COVID-19 data in March before launching her Arkansas COVID Twitter account in April. For the past 5 months, Orpin has shared her analysis of state data on ArkansasCOVID.com and with her more than 12,000 Twitter followers. In the coming days, Orpin will hand over the reins to the University of Arkansas School of Journalism and Strategic Media, who will continue working on the project in the future. To learn more about the transition, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda spoke with Misty Orpin, Assistant Professor Rob Wells, and U of A senior Mary Hennigan. Orpin explained that she first connected with the journalism school in May.
So Rob reached out and offered me Mary as an intern to help me with demographics. And that internship was funded through a couple of different organizations, but it was under Arkansas SOL, which Rob can talk about better than I can. But I had Mary all summer, and she was absolutely incredible and helped stay on top of all the demographic data, which, as we know, has been so key with this pandemic because different populations have been impacted so disproportionately. And it was such a wonderful experience as I approached the fall and my kids going back to school. I knew that it wasn't sustainable for me to continue what I was doing at the same level. And so taking that partnership to the next level and asking Rob and his wonderful team to take it on full time just seemed like the natural evolution of the project.
And Mary, what is your background in this type of reporting, this type of, you know, working with real-time data, and what did you learn from your experience over the summer?
So I only had one experience, honestly, working with data, and that was with Dr. Rob Wells in the School of Journalism. And we worked with student debt numbers. So this was the first time where I really got to immerse myself in real-time data. And what I learned is that it's really eye-opening and things can change in one day. And you can have one story one day and then it completely turn on its head the next day.
Dealing specifically with demographics, were you surprised by what you were finding in the data?
The data was surprising. The Marshallese community got really impacted by the coronavirus. So the Pacific Islander numbers were very high in Arkansas. And that was really important to portray because not everybody knows that we have that Marshallese community in Northwest Arkansas. And so just informing the people of that demographic, I think, was one of the most important things that I got to do over the summer.
And Rob, what sort of role did you play in this? You have a couple of classes, or is it just one class that sort of works with data in general? And then can you talk a little bit about the partnership with Arkansas SOL that Misty spoke about?
So I teach a data journalism class now every semester, and that class will get involved with a project looking at one specific story. In the spring semester, we looked at homeless data and partnered with an investigative reporting center at the University of Maryland, the Howard Center for Investigative Journalism. So this semester, I really wanted to do something with Arkansas COVID, and I talked to Misty about partnering with my class, and we would produce graphics and stories and have them posted on Arkansas COVID after she, you know, approved them and so forth. So that was the plan. And then this, you know, opportunity came up, kind of a once in a lifetime opportunity, to tell you the truth, to have my students, you know, operate a website that has nearly 12,000 Twitter followers and a very, very respected following. And so I jumped at it. It's very unusual. It's a lot of work, but I have 6 graduate students this semester. All are experienced like Mary and have the basic training down and are very, very excited about getting into this.
And where did Arkansas Soul play into all of this? And will that partnership continue, or was that just for the summer?
Sure. So Arkansas Soul was created by Professor Nikita Reed at the School of Journalism, and it's an outreach program to teach media skills to African-American high school students. She had this really neat program the summer before last, where brought in nearly a dozen students from around the state, taught them media skills. And this year, we were going to crank it up even more. And I was working for Nikita as the web editor. And one of the things we wanted to do was a real-time dashboard with Tableau numbers automatically updating data from the Department of Health that focuses on race. And I saw what Misty was doing. It's like, man, that's exactly what I want to do. I had to call her up. and I called her up. I said, you're doing exactly what I wanted to do, but it looks much nicer. It has better analysis. And so we saw eye to eye pretty quickly. Arkansas Soul had a little bit of money, so I was able to get some funding from Arkansas Soul and the Northwest Arkansas Society for Professional Journalists matched the grant, and we're able to give Mary a little bit of funding over the summer. So that Arkansas Soul partnership is part of the School of Journalism, and yes, we will still be working with them.
So Misty, when is the official handoff, and do you plan to continue being involved in some smaller way?
Yeah, well, I'll definitely still be involved. I can't wait to comment as myself on Arkansas COVID posts. I'm excited about that. I still want to be involved. I know I'm going to be talking with Rob's students. So yes, it's very important to me to still have a role in Arkansas COVID. And I believe the handoff is September 7th. Is that our target date?
That's the soft launch. And then we are running it on the 14th.
And so how will the day-to-day operations change now that there's a team running it? What will be different? We mentioned a little bit, 2 different dates there. Will there be a time that the website is down, or what are we looking at?
So hopefully it will stay up without a hitch. And what is happening now is there's a lot of work on the back end to restructure the workflow. And to bring in some automation tools. And I have a programmer I'm working with. And so Misty had created a workflow that worked for her, but to have a team, it needs to be standardized and so forth. So we're doing that. I believe that this new workflow will take out a lot of the manual labor. And so I will have full-time, you know, a intern who will be touching the site every day, a graduate intern. And it is her job to make sure that the automated data feeds update. And then the class will be contributing every week. And it's part of, we'll have a rotating schedule of duties, but students will be tweeting and doing stories and data visualization. So we'll have 3 basic things: the tweets, the stories, and the data. visualizations, and then hopefully podcasts after that.
Mary, will you continue to be involved? And if so, what are you going to be doing?
I will be involved. I am in the data journalism class. And so what I'm really looking forward to is writing the stories. Not that I have time to, kind of elaborate on what I've been looking at for the past few months. I'm really excited that I can share with people stories instead of just number stories now.
What is the importance of giving readers that option to have those people stories instead of just the numbers?
So when people look at numbers for too long, they just become numbers, when really those numbers have faces and they have names. And so by being able to go out and do the reporting with these particular groups, for instance, maybe it's someone of the age who's being the most impacted or of the race of the most impacted, you can be more personable with the numbers. So now not every number doesn't have a name. You know, it's Janice or whoever. And so I'm really excited that I can personify the numbers.
Now that there's a team, is there anything in particular that you're looking forward to being able to add to the site or perhaps make more robust because there are more people?
There'll be more stories. Probably in the next month, we'll be able to have a regular feed of posts. And I would like to get more podcasts. But we have a very big job of maintaining the response and the relationship with the existing community. I don't really know how Misty did it, but she built a very, very strong bond with thousands of people throughout Arkansas. And for us to maintain those relationships will be quite an achievement if we can pull it off. So that's my main goal.
That's actually one of the things I'm really excited about is I feel like Arkansans have really embraced the platform and trust it and rely on it daily. And so I'm so excited that this team is going to be able to take it so next level. You know, they're going to be able to provide the stories, and where I'd sometimes have data and I'd know maybe that something was wonky about it, but I wouldn't have time to run it down. Right. And so they're going to have the capability to really full package the site in a way that I never could. And so I think the community is going to get so much more than what they were getting when it was just me and Mary trying to pull it off on our own.
And Misty, when we spoke earlier this year, one of the things we discussed was there were certain things that I think the way in which the state was presenting the data, you were saying you wish they would do it different ways or you wish they would have more details about certain things. Having talked to them about that and having had your own website, have you noticed those changes have come to fruition, or are those still things that you're hoping will happen eventually?
Yeah, it's so funny. COVID is such a moving target, right? Because everything changes so quickly. Like, you know, now we have an entirely new way of testing that we didn't have back in May, the antigen testing. And so it's continually adding new layers of data that we need and expect from our leaders. But I will say that over the past few months, they have added since May additional layers, and I think they do continue to try to do better with messaging and get it out in new ways that are engaging to the public and accessible to the public. So yes, I do think that they are making strides and improvements every week in how they present the data. And Arkansas COVID is just kind of here to augment that and provide, you know, that real-time response to the needs that Arkansans have that maybe they're not already getting.
Are you surprised at how large this project has grown, and how do you feel about where it's come from when you started it on your own to where it's going now?
Yes, I would have never in a million years predicted that it would have gotten this large. I mean, if I had gotten 100 Twitter followers in the beginning, I would have just been flabbergasted. So yes, it's really outgrown me. I never intended for it to be a full-time job. I always wanted it to be a side project that, you know, I did in my spare time. But to really do it justice, because so many people have responded to it, they deserve that. And I'm so glad that Rob and his team are going to be able to do that.
Is there value in having an outside group of people, in this case, journalism students, working on something like this instead of just leaving it to state health officials or whoever happens to be whose job it is to keep up with the data and share it?
Yeah, I think there is. I think there's value. There's always value in fact checking, right? I think especially with COVID and it's such a controversial topic, and we've seen an inherent lack of trust from some groups about how the information is being presented. So even if it's just to reiterate and to say, hey, I checked this math and this checks out, or I looked at this data and this makes sense, or I looked at this data and it doesn't make sense. Like, I think that's a super important role. You know, we've had some people via Twitter and on an email ask, like, do you trust this handoff? Do you feel like, because I've been kind of rogue at times and been able to really express some views that may be contrary to official lines. And so I've had people ask me if I trust that the U of A partners are going to be able to continue that. And I just want to reiterate that I do think that they will do a great job. I don't see any outside pressures coming in on them. Mary has always been very forthright. Rob's always been very forthright. But another thing that I know is so key to this is the community is so vocal and so strong, and the community demands accountability. They demand accountability from their leaders. They demand accountability from the journalists. And I know that they're going to demand accountability from Arkansas COVID. So I know if they see it going askew, they will let us know. And so I have absolute faith that it's going to maintain the same level of reporting integrity that it has up to this point, and better, because sometimes I can, you know, I can inject more opinion than I know that Rob and Mary will do.
Any final thoughts about the website and where it's come and where it's going?
I would just add that, you know, student journalism is playing increasingly important role as the media system, the traditional media system has restructured, and we've seen closures of a lot of local media outlets. You see student media taking up, you know, very important roles, like at Arizona State, the Cronkite News Service, I believe, has the only full-time Washington bureau for the state of Arizona. Those are student journalists. The University of Maryland's Capital News Service has three bureaus covering Maryland, and their material is distributed on occasion through the Associated Press. So University of Arkansas students have been playing in this league now for a couple semesters, and it's just a super important role as the media system evolves. As student journalists can definitely step up and fill a void.
Well, thank you so much for your time, and congratulations on the next phase of the project.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot, Antoinette. I really appreciate it.
That was Misty Orpin, founder of ArkansasCOVID.com, Rob Wells, assistant professor of journalism at the University of Arkansas, and U of A senior Mary Hennigan. They spoke via Zoom with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda earlier this week. More information about the project is available at ArkansasCOVID.com.
September is Fall Fundraising Month here at KUAF. Our goal is $140,000, vital funds to pay for the national and local programs you rely on and that have been on the air for more than 35 years. Now is the time to show your support for everything you hear on KUAF. Give during our Fall Fundraising Month of September. Go to supportkuaf.com. Thank you.
A crew from Ozarks Electric is now in DeRidder, Louisiana, to help restore power in the central part of that state after Hurricane Laura passed through last week. The utility sent 22 employees and several vehicles to aid in the restoration of power. SWEPCO and other utility companies from around Arkansas have also sent crews and materials to areas that suffered damage from the storm. A Rogers High School counselor and coach is being recognized for his work as an educator by Yale University. Carlton Eford has been named a recipient of the 2020 Yale Educator Award. That honor selects educators from around the world for their ability to inspire and support their students. He was nominated for the award by student Miguel Garcia. And Eford is one of 24 counselors selected for the honor in 2020. The University of Arkansas women's basketball coaching staff is adding a high-profile figure. Kelsey Plum, the all-time leading scorer in NCAA basketball history, is joining the Razorback staff as a graduate assistant coach. She played for current Razorback head coach Mike Nabors when he was the head coach at Washington. Plum was named National Player of the Year her senior year at Washington, 2017, by all 10 entities that make such an award. She's currently a member of the WNBA's Las Vegas Aces team. The continued pandemic keeps many of us in unusual schedules, learning from home, teaching from home, working from home, and recording from home. This week's new Reflections in Black from Raven Cook was again recorded at Raven's home.
This is Reflections in Black, and I'm your host, Raven Cook. Reflections in Black is a segment dedicated to exploring the legacy of Black Americans in the United States and around the globe. Reflections in Black also provides resources for understanding and hope for all people. Lately, there has been much discussion around the announcement of Democratic presidential nominee, former Vice President Joe Biden's running mate, Senator Kamala Harris. A firestorm arose the day after the announcement as historians reiterated the distinguished title of the first Black woman vice president did not belong to the vice presidential hopeful, but in fact, a woman connected to our American past. Born in South Carolina in 1879, Charlotta Spears was destined for great things. In the early 20th century, Spears would move from South Carolina to Rhode Island before finally settling in Los Angeles, California. To make a living, Spears began selling subscriptions for a Black newspaper called The Eagle. In 1914, she would marry Joseph Blackburn Bass, the editor of The Eagle, and become Charlotta Bass. As a feminist and political activist, Bass frequently spoke out against the Ku Klux Klan in California and stood up against President Franklin Delano Roosevelt's New Deal representatives. With a deep conviction to democracy, Bass worked in the Republican Party and believed in the necessity of democracy at home and abroad. In 1948, Bass would support Henry Wallace, and in 1952 will become the first Black female candidate to be nominated for vice president, running on a progressive ticket. Throughout her life, Bass would deal with heavy FBI surveillance. However, she would continue her fight for equal rights until her death in 1969. Today, we honor the life and legacy of the pioneering Charlotta Bass.
Reflections in Black is a production of KUAF Public Radio in Fayetteville. You can hear weekly segments on Ozarks at Large, and you can find past editions at KUAF.com. Just search Reflections in Black.
This is Ozarks at Large. Thanks for being with us on this midweek edition. The Democrats and Republicans have had their virtual conventions, and the campaigns for the White House are now in the final months. This week, Roby Brock, with our partner Talk Business and Politics, asked John Brummett, political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, if anything at either convention caused a dramatic shift in the dynamics of the presidential race.
I don't know that we've seen anything that indicates a strong change in momentum. It felt to me like the Republicans had made their case very effectively, a case I personally disdain, but I thought they made it very effectively.
What is the case?
The case is, may I tell you straight, rather, not the way they would tell. The case is, we know you suburban women don't like Trump. He scares you. Maybe he ought to scare you. But what we're going to have to do is scare you more. And we're going to have to let you think about the fact that you've survived these 4 years. How about if the protesters come in on your cul-de-sac and won't leave, and the Democrats won't run them out? That's
and the terrifying Cory Booker, Senator from
right.
New Jersey.
Cory Booker will be in charge. That was the message. And the race, the difference between 16 and 18, the presidential election and midterms, there are a lot of differences, but one big one was the votes of suburban white women. They went with Trump. They went Republican.
In 16.
In 18, they wanted somebody to keep watch on Trump. I think the Republicans came in and said, we got to scare them half to death about these protesters. And I think they hammered it so hard that I thought they had some effect. The only quantified thing I've seen is a morning consult poll. You may have seen some other polls. Went from 52-42 before the convention to 50-44 after Biden ahead.
Yeah.
You know, that's within
the
margin for error.
It's
not what we used to consider a bump. So I feel some movement. I've always felt a close race coming. It's in my bones. This is going to be a nail biter. Because remember, 50-44 means nothing. What matters is, what do some people who are still apt to go either way, what are they thinking in three or four
538
states?
Electoral votes, yes, is what matters. Yes.
And this play, people are saying this is a Trump convention for his base. He's just trying to mobilize his base. No, he's not. He's trying to tell he knows there are people still undecided, and he said, I can scare them of Biden more than they're scared of me. And I think they made that play. And I thought they did about as good a job of it as they could have done.
What's the Biden and the Democrats' counter message? What do they come back with now post-conventions to counter that message or to deliver a message that they're more interested in delivering for the general election?
Well, I've not been clear on the Democratic message at all.
You don't think it's, I'm not Trump?
That's it. That was it of the convention. That's it. I'm not Trump. Trump complicates that by saying, essentially, I know y'all don't like me, but y'all to scare them more. What we saw yesterday in Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh, from Biden, was a speech with a little different tone and a little different prioritizing of his points on the crime in the streets and unrest in the streets and race and police issues. I think previously Democrats had been trying to thread a needle, which is, we need to worry about these police shootings. Black people are entitled to say their lives matter and their supporters are entitled to protest. Certainly we decry all forms of violence, police against black suspects, vigilantes, and those on the margins of these protests who engage in violence. And that was all seeming modulated and could have played into this Republican narrative that they're weak on defending your property. And Biden went to Pennsylvania. He got a little more forceful, and he put as his lead, rioting is not protest, setting fires is not protest, looting is not protest. It's crime, and it will not be tolerated and must be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. For the moment, I think Democrats are in a position of having to say that obvious thing, yeah, and say it louder and first.
Let's move to sports, something you just don't get to write enough about.
But I was, as you know.
UCA is 1-0.
Yeah.
If this season were to end tomorrow, would they be the national collegiate champs? And do the Hogs get to be 1-0? Will they get to 1-0? These are tough questions I throw your way.
I've got a column coming Sunday in which I visit with my friend, Bubba McCoy. And Bubba McCoy, the car dealer in East Arkansas, says to me, I turned on the television Saturday night, and I saw a live football game. And I sat there and I watched it, and then I realized this was Teachers College up at Conway, which is what we used to call UCA.
Right.
What a remarkable opportunity for the University of Central Arkansas to play this game. Did you know, Vegas says there was as much bet on that game as on Alabama-Auburn, the Iron Bowl, because it was the only game in town.
Right.
And people were so desperate to bet and so desperate to watch football. And they won the game, which was almost incidental, but it was nice. Times are changing. Even in Arkansas, where our culture is very static and we change slowly, but Arkansas State has made inroads toward big-time football. Now Central Arkansas gets this attention. And Arkansas and the university's been in decline. It's like turning a major ship at sea, and it takes a longer time in Arkansas than elsewhere, but times are indeed changing. Your question is, no, UCA will not be number one, even though they won this game. If they were number one, then Austin Peay would have to be 1A, I guess. And I don't think the Hogs get to 1-0. I think they lose an opener. I think your question may have been, will they even get to that game? May have been the point.
I left that open for you to take that bait.
I think we're
going to
get there. I think we're going to get there. I think we're going to keep the players who test positive quarantined, and they're going to have enough players to start this thing. Now, we'll see how far it goes. But UCA, Central Arkansas, Bubba McCoy's Teachers College up at Conway, was involved in the game that showed how it's done in terms of distancing, mm-hmm. in terms of broadcasting, in terms of the cheerleaders not being on the sidelines, in terms of the players being spread out. And all of that was the University of Central Arkansas, Conway, and the National Collegiate Football Vanguard right now.
John Brummett is a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Roby Brock is with our partner, Talk Business and Politics. There is more from the conversation at talkbusiness.net. And you can find John Brummett's columns at arkansasonline.com. The Oklahoma State Department of Health is adding a dozen fatalities to that state's COVID-19 deaths. One of the deaths occurred in the past 24 hours. 9 of the 12 additional deaths, people aged 65 and older. The other 3 victims were between the ages of 50 and 64. Oklahoma has now recorded 821 virus deaths since the pandemic began. University of Arkansas Chancellor Joe Steinmetz is again asking the campus community to wear face coverings, wash hands frequently, and physically distance. In an email to the university community today, the chancellor wrote that the number of university-affiliated cases suggests too many people still aren't taking the virus seriously. He also writes the administration is receiving emails from students who say they fear for their safety. And he writes that no one should feel that way because others don't want to be inconvenienced by safety precautions. The chancellor asked for good examples to be set and for people on campus to hold each other accountable by reporting risky behavior to an established website, report.uark.edu. A Friday morning virtual panel titled Fall Forum, Coping with COVID-19, will be open to members of the campus to watch and ask questions of medical experts and senior university officials. And tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, the University of Arkansas is posting campus COVID-19 active case data on a new online dashboard.
The data includes all of the on-campus testing and the results, whether it's negative or positive. And we move to a 3 times a week reporting schedule now. So we update the dashboard report every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
We'll have the details of that and so much more on tomorrow's Thursday edition of Ozarks at Large at noon and 7. On 91.3 KUAF, you can also ask your smart speaker to play the Ozarks at Large show, and it will give you the most recent edition of our program. And you can always go to ozarksatlarge.com.
KUAF is supported by Pack Rat Outdoor Center, Northwest Arkansas's outdoor outfitter since 1973. Pack Rat offers a variety of backpacks, tents, kayaks, clothes, and shoes. Information on Facebook or online at packratoc.com. Support provided by Fayetteville Animal Shelter and Services, supported by the City of Fayetteville and dedicated to the welfare of animals and the people who associate with them. Information at 444-3456 or Fayetteville Animal Services on Facebook.
This is Ozarks at Large. It is Wednesday, the second day of September 2020. You can probably tell I have my mask on. I think you can tell the difference between when someone is talking without a mask and with a mask. And that means someone's in the Anthony and Susan Hoy news studio with me. It is Lee Wood, general manager of 91.3 KUAF.
I have a mask on as well.
Yes, you do.
Yes. And I can tell that you have a mask on.
Well, you can.
I know.
I can tell when I listen to Morning Edition or a show.
Mm-hmm.
I think I can catch when someone is masked.
Yeah. But, you know, it's now I feel like we're all so used to it.
Oh, sure.
It doesn't even really register.
It's not a complaint, yeah. Just an observation.
Yeah, absolutely.
So here we are, both masked and 6 feet apart. This is fundraising month for 91.3.
It's began. It started yesterday on the 1st, And like we've done for several years in the past, we're going to raise money all during the month of September. All the gifts that come in September are going to count toward our overall goal. We hope to raise $140,000. It's our first full goal since the pandemic began.
Right.
We had a, you know, we decreased our goals significantly in our spring drive and in our June drive. But we're coming out for the full fundraising month and trying to raise what we would normally raise during a normal year. And that's because our expenses, unfortunately, have not come down.
They're normal.
They're normal, in fact. And they there's a slight increase every year because of technology and programming and all kinds of things. So we are looking to raise the same amount that we would during any other fundraising month, $140,000. And I'm, you know, I'm certain that we can do it. We had tremendous success in the spring and in June because of listener support. And so we're hoping that listeners will yet again support that the programs and the services that we've been providing and that they've been relying on this whole time.
Now, there will be some differences, though, even though this is a, quote, normal fundraiser. We're not going to have phone volunteers in the building.
We will not have phone volunteers in the building. So we will not be asking you to call a number to make your donation. We're going to direct everyone to supportkuaf.com, our online donation page. And we will, though, go live. We haven't had any live fundraising since last December, really. And I do think that it is, it's kind of important to hear those live voices mm-hmm. and to hear voices at different times in the day than you're used to. And it really does convey the sense of urgency that is important. You know, we're looking to raise $140,000 over the entire month. That's not half of what it costs for the programming for this station wow. overall. So these are vital funds that we need to help pay for programming and staffing and equipment and technology and all the things it takes to bring you the 24 hours of programming that you love and listen to every day.
And again, without phone volunteers, we won't have restaurants bringing food for volunteers since we don't have volunteers.
That's right. It is going to be a little bit different inside the building. And it is one of those things that I really look forward to getting back to, that community involvement. We're going to have some community involvement with some other organizations, and we may even go out and just get some food, you know, support some restaurants so that we in the building sort of feel a little bit more normal. And of course, so that we can thank those people on the air. But no, we'll just be reminding you all month long that, you know, we're a public radio station. The way that we pay our bills is through listener support. More than 75% of our operating budget comes from individual listeners and local businesses. It is a tough time for businesses all around. It's a tough time for other nonprofit organizations, especially those in the entertainment and live event sort of categories. And so individuals that can support the station, it is more important than ever that you do, because we're trying to help in the areas where there are certain businesses and organizations who just simply cannot give right now.
Now, since it is fundraising month, if you go to supportkuaf.com right now, your gift does get added into the $140,000.
It absolutely does. We started counting money yesterday. And if you are interested, you can always make a challenge pledge. We'll use your donation basically during the on-air fundraiser, which is the 21st through the 25th, the last full week of the month. And we'll basically, you say you'd like your donation to encourage others to give, and you'll match their donation dollar for dollar. So if you're interested in not just supporting the station but making a challenge pledge, you can go to kuaf.com/issue-challenge. You'll learn all about it, and then whatever you decide to give to the station hopefully will bring in new members.
Finally, speaking of donations, my office, the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, looks through a series of windows out to the front parking lot. So I see through the day people coming up, putting in donations of PPE into the outdoor bin, which we then bring inside and will distribute to area schools.
Absolutely. We, just like you said this morning, you came in and there was a full bin.
Yep.
So the generosity of this community is incredible. And we do have a full bin. We have basically the hole underneath of the tree is full, so it's time to start distributing. We're reaching out to individual teachers that we have heard are in particular need. There are teachers, of course, who work in different kinds of classrooms, special ed classrooms, art classrooms, places where they might need a little bit more supplies. And so we're reaching out to those teachers directly first to distribute, and then we're going to continue to take donations of PPE during the entire month. We'll talk about it while we're fundraising, so that hopefully we can do many, many distributions to public schools all over the area.
It has not slowed down every day. And of course, I don't always have, if I'm recording or interviewing someone on the phone, the shade is down, I can't see out. But when I do have access to it's a steady stream of people making these donations.
It's amazing. And again, it's one of the best things about working for KUAF is that I feel like we get to witness the generosity and the love of community all the time, especially during a fundraiser and especially during a time like this, like the Giving Tree, because I'm overwhelmed with how generous and how much people care here. So please do keep those donations coming. You can walk your donation for your money donation in for the fundraiser. If you also want to bring in a donation of PPE, that would be fantastic. But this is how, we get things done. And we've seen since March what this community is capable of. And I think that we're just going to continue to do it. And especially the things that we value, the services that we value, we have to support them right now.
All right. Lee Wood talking to us on day 172 of the station lockdown, if you can believe that. Lee, thanks so much.
Thank you, Kyle.
For the Central Arkansas Library System, I'm Mark Chris with an Encyclopedia of Arkansas Minute. The Presbyterian Church was the vanguard of teaching black children in Hot Springs in the late 19th century. Reverend A.E. Torrence opened a parochial school for black students in the early 1890s, which was highly regarded locally for its program of culture and quality education. In 1904, Reverend C.S. Mebane took over the school, including ownership of its property and equipment. While many referred to the school as the Mebane Academy, he called it the Hot Springs Normal and Industrial Institute. Attendance varied over the years, but by 1914, the institute had 70 students who were taught by three black teachers while Mebane's wife served as principal. In the early 1920s, Hot Springs built a public school for black students. The Presbyterian Board of Missions at the same time was evaluating which schools it could continue to support and began closing financially struggling schools where public schools were available. Mebane Academy closed in the late 20s. To learn more, visit encyclopediaofarkansas.net.
And before we leave you tonight, we'd like you to know that as a three-day holiday weekend approaches, forest managers with the Ozark St. Francis and Ouachita National Forest are warning heavy rains this week have created some problems for visitors. Some roads near swollen creeks have become unstable, and some recreation areas have closed because of the dangers. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Grove, Oklahoma. 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Contributors to tonight's program included Antoinette Grajeda and Raven Cook. Tonight's Reflections in Black and tonight's Ozarks at Large, produced by Timothy Dennis. Our conversations between John Brummett and Roby Brock are part of our partnership with Talk Business and Politics. Thanks to Lee Wood, General Manager at 91.3 KUAF, for being on the show tonight, and thanks to Zuzana Sitek for her help on this Wednesday. From the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio in downtown Fayetteville, I'm Kyle Kellums. We are back with you tomorrow at noon with a brand new Thursday edition of the show. Take care of yourself. Talk to you soon.